This is Scary List on the Pope, I'll tell you that. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to Bob and Yurt Live. I'm the pastor of Denver Bible Church, and we've begun to make a list on the current Pope, Pope Francis. And I'll share that with you a bit later in the show, but it's a scary list. You know, we're well known for our list shows, especially on Fridays, Real Science Radio. But we also have lists on other topics, and now this is a list of things that the Pope has said or done, which, well, I don't know how to describe the list other than to say it's horrifying, actually. So we'll get to that. And then also an important update in our continued reporting on the revolution in cancer treatment from targeted antibodies. It's starting to get more coverage from the mainstream media for a long time here at Bob and Yurt Live. We felt like the lone voice, especially locally, but we'll get to that. This is an estimate of how many people suffering from cancer could be helped by targeted antibodies if they can get the treatment. So this is astounding, along with another 12-year-old girl who's been saved by this immunotherapy. Also, I'd like to read a letter from a listener in Hawaii. Great letter. And then I was thinking about the three things I hear mostly from mom and pops. If you think about the things you hear mostly from friends, family, enemies, audience members, what do you hear mostly? I was thinking about the three things that I hear mostly from mom and pops, and I boiled it down to this. I went to the doctor yesterday. I'm going to the doctor tomorrow, and I went to the doctor today. Those are the three things I hear mostly from mom and pops. Okay, this letter from a listener in Hawaii, we'll call him Doug. So Doug sends this really amazing account of what happened at his church, the church he was attending. Oh, in passing, he mentions our list of 10 things a PC can do that a Mac can't do. That's surprisingly popular online. But then he gets to our show and his church. So Doug writes, Bob, I love your radio programs, and I go through your archives regularly, listening to a few of the older programs each week. In the church that I had been attending, there was a deacon and a deaconess who were living together without being married. Now, of course, that's so sad because if a man loves a woman, he's not going to use her. And if a woman loves a man, he's not going to use her. And God, who created us, he tells us in the Bible that sex outside of marriage is fornication, that it hurts one another and it hurts others around you. It hurts the whole culture because God's standards are no longer important to anyone. You just do whatever you feel like, even from Christians, increasingly. And so Doug finds out, one way or another, that a deacon and a deaconess in his church who were serving communion, no less, were shacking up without being married. So he continues, I talked with them to confirm it, and they were very open about it, and I suggested that they talk with the pastor. Well, the pastor wouldn't do much. He said that all the churches have the same problem. Now, that's an exaggeration, right? Isn't that an exaggeration? Denver Bible Church doesn't have that problem. If there were people attending the church who were sinning, who were fornicating, who were shacking up, sleeping together, then we would talk to them and that would not continue at the church. But at any rate, the pastor said that all the churches have the same problem. But I happen to know that some churches around us, that's there in Hawaii, ask people to get married or to leave the church, which is biblical. That's what the Bible says. If you love your neighbor, you're not going to help them destroy themselves. So the Bible talks about when to disfellowship believers who are sinning, people who name the name of Christ and they're sinning and they're not repenting. And so Doug says that there are churches around him in Hawaii who will ask such a couple to get married or to leave the church. Actually, it's you disfellowship them. And these churches certainly would not allow such individuals to serve communion or to retain office unless they repented. So I appreciate Doug in his clear thinking and his love for his neighbors. Because apathy, like, you know, teach is known, I don't care what they do. Apathy is a form of hatred. People around you disobeying God, destroying themselves, and you just don't care. Or you even approve of it. Or you secretly approve of it. Because then your own sin, you feel better about your own sin if the people around you are sinning. That's one of the reasons Bill Clinton had such a high approval rating. He was a lying fornicator, but he made tens of millions of lying fornicators feel better about themselves. So he had high approval ratings. Ultimately, the situation got to the elder board, Doug writes, which unanimously thought that this was none of the church's business to, quote, interfere with people's lives. Isn't that what the church is about? People's lives, families, marriage, children, their souls, their spirits, their eternal life, their spiritual well-being, their moral and emotional health. But churches, many churches, they have lost their way. They no longer recognize the Bible as a standard that they are obligated to follow per the command of Jesus Christ. Many churches don't recognize that any longer. It's irrelevant to them. So Doug writes, and this is completely predictable, eventually I became the villain because I carefully asked this couple whether or not they were married. The leadership continued to allow them to serve communion and then even encouraged them to take more visible leadership roles in the hierarchy of the church. Of course, right? When you sin, when you are sinning, and this pastor was sinning, and the elders of the church were sinning, not only the couple, but Paul writes that, the Apostle Paul, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. And that's why, and especially with sexual immorality, which is so prevalent, but all forms of unrepentant sin, a little leaven leavens the whole lump. So you admonish a couple like this that they need to not fornicate, stop fornicating, and either break up or get married. And if they won't do that, then you disfellowship them because a little leaven leavens the whole lump. Very few people care about those kinds of teachings in the Bible. And I mean very few percentage-wise. Certainly most of our churches, from what I hear and what I observe, these matters are no longer relevant in most of our churches. And if it's not relevant in your church, you need to pray for your church, pray for your pastor who's sinning, and consider finding another church. Consider that. Quite often it's pretty hard to do. So the church, because the leadership were confronted, they were admonished about their sin, and instead of repenting and being humble, they dug in. So what people do often when they dig in is they make it more emphatic, their sin, more emphatic. We went to see that film, on creation. Is Genesis history? What a great film. And we'll be interviewing one of the scientists in there, a biologist, molecular biologist, Rob Carter. He is just such an awesome scientist. He'll be on Real Science Radio soon, Lord willing. But we are in the lobby of the theater. We're waiting to buy our tickets. And there was a teenage boy there dressed like a woman, dressed in the most bizarre clothing. His pants, I don't know how to describe them. Just hard to describe his pants. At any rate, maybe a 20-year-old gal just happened to be walking by and, you know, caught this guy out of the corner of her eye and turned and said this, and I want to ask you what she meant by saying this. She said, "I love your pants." And she keeps walking by, and then she turns around more and she says, "I love you." And then she went into the theater as she walked by. What did she mean by that? She doesn't even know this guy. She might, you know, who knows? But what she meant was, "I hate God. I hate God, and I am encouraged by your rebellion. The fact that you are a boy dressing like a girl and undermining the authority of Jesus Christ, who said that God made us male and female at the beginning of creation. I love you because you hate God." That's what she was saying. So Doug in Hawaii said, "Eventually I left." And then a sad footnote to the story. 9 months later, the pastor died of liver cancer after only being diagnosed just weeks earlier. Boy, that's something, huh? Now, if I were a superstitious Christian, which at Denver Bible Church, we teach against superstition. And Doug, I know because he listens to our show, he's not a superstitious Christian. So I'll just leave it there. I don't have to say what I would say if I were a superstitious Christian, which means if I were an especially immature, naive Christian who is resisting the teachings of the Lord and the teachings throughout the Bible. If I were that kind of Christian, I would make some stupid comment about this pastor dying from liver cancer. But I'm not that kind of Christian. But we do have some superstitious Christians who listen to the show. Not too many, because we have the brightest audience in the country. But there are some. So I'll leave it to them to tell that story to a friend and then add some really superstitious conclusion. Okay, so the very interesting update on the cancer treatment revolution from CBS News. There is yet another 12-year-old girl who has been saved by immunotherapy. Another girl. This is not the girl up in Boulder, Colorado. This is another 12-year-old girl who is about ready to die who seems to have been saved. But there are so many cases like this now, we can't report them all. And that's actually not why I'm telling you about this CBS News report. And if you want to see this for yourself, you could go to our website, kgov.com/targeted antibodies. Targeted-antibodies. We always put a hyphen between words in our URLs, our domain name, and then how to find a topic on Bob and Hart Live's website. So kgov.com/targeted-antibodies. In this report, CBS News interviewed a doctor, a scientist from the National Cancer Institute, Dr. Steven Rosenberg. I think he's the world's leading expert on targeted antibody treatment. He's been working on this since 1984. And they asked him the perfect question, the question that needed to be asked. What percentage of cancer patients, people suffering from cancer, could be helped right now today if they had access to targeted antibody treatment? That's a really good question, because there's 1,000 different kinds of cancers, and each targeted therapy may help one or a few of the cancers, but they don't help all the cancers. So here is how he responded. This is Dr. Steven Rosenberg at the National Cancer Institute. He said, if you look at all cancer patients, perhaps 10% can be helped by immunotherapy today, but that percentage is improving every day. And he's right, because we've been following the accounts. There are so many. There are hundreds of different studies of targeted antibodies. So the one reason we've been reporting on this at Bob Inert Live is because the Denver Post has not, and KOA Radio has not, and KHAL Radio has not, and KNUS has not, and ABC has not, basically, and NBC, not. CBS, finally, they put their toe in the water. But there should be something like a weekly update in the mainstream media for the progress of the cancer treatment revolution that's currently happening. It's exhilarating, it's thrilling, and you find out about it. We maintain a list of all the latest updates on our website, kgov.com/targeted antibodies. Now for the Pope. Oh boy. Pope Francis. You know, years ago I had a debate with a Catholic, and it was in studio. We have, in fact, a resource on our store, Bob Debates a Catholic. Really good, respectful discussion of Catholic doctrine and the difference between Catholic doctrine and the typical beliefs held by, let's say, the pastor of a Bible church. Well, let's say Denver Bible Church. And so, really great debate. You might want to go to our store, kgov.com, click on the store, and check out Bob Debates a Catholic. But Pope Francis, he was asked about his doubts, whether or not he has doubts. And I'll share with you in a moment his response, part of his response. But I want to start by describing the first assignment that he gave many years ago when he was a teacher in Argentina. This is 1964. He gets a class of teenage boys, and he's in front of the class. And so his first assignment to these boys was to read the writing of an openly homosexual author. That was his first assignment. Now, if you're a teacher, you care about the kids in your class. You want to have an impact. You want to make a difference in their lives. So, you know, this is in Argentina. So perhaps he could have assigned maybe Don Quixote or El Cid or something, or maybe something from the Bible just as a stretch. But instead, he assigned the writings of a Garcia Lorca from Spain, who was, as I said, openly homosexual in his work, if you could call it work. It's perversion. So back in the 60s, we've said this here on Bob Inert Live, that the current crisis that the Roman Catholic Church has gone through with the molestation scandal with priests molesting children, that scandal hit one of our own church members' families real hard, Denver Bible Church. One of our dearest friends, her cousin, who she was very close with, living in a small town here in Colorado, was molested by a Roman Catholic priest who had been in the Denver Archdiocese. He was sent up to Leadville, Colorado. That's like being sent to the Russian front if you're a priest in Denver. They sent him up to Leadville, Colorado, and there was a death in the family. This young boy's father died, and the priest came to give moral support to the mother and said, "Don't worry, your son will have a friend, a mentor." And he traveled with that boy. He introduced him to pornography, alcohol. He molested him. And there's the contemporaneous witnesses of other boys from Leadville, friends, who confirm these details, because some of them even traveled with the boy who eventually killed himself and this priest. And so this boy, our church member's cousin, grew up to become a firefighter, never overcame his alcoholism, that he was introduced to alcohol as, you know, like a 14-year-old boy, and pornography and depression. And eventually he left a handwritten note behind and he killed himself. And that note describes in detail how this priest molested him. So we went to the Archdiocese in Denver and we asked one question. Were there allegations against this priest before he was moved to Leadville? That was the only question. And our church member, so I went and the two of us, and they said, we would love to answer your question, but we can't. We can only talk to the immediate family members, like parents, children, siblings. So this victim, his sister, lived in Utah. So, you know, our church member, being part of the family, called her. We flew her to Denver, and then the three of us went to the Archdiocese. Okay, now we have the sister. And you know what we did? Basically, we talked to lawyers. That was it. They would say nothing. Nothing. And that told us that they were not contrite. They were not sorry. In fact, they were running ads on TV and the radio. If you or anyone in your family was hurt, please come in to the Archdiocese. We need to help the healing process, something like that. And we realized what those ads meant was they wanted their lawyers to figure out if they were vulnerable to lawsuits. That's all those ads meant, because there was no contrition. There was no willingness to answer the single question, were there allegations against this priest before you moved him to Leadville, where he could be a sexual predator and prey on our loved one? That was the question. If there were no allegations before the move, then there's no guilt there. There's no responsibility. But if there were allegations, it's horrific. And so what we've talked about on the show for years is that back in the 1960s, Roman Catholic seminaries began openly admitting homosexuals, with the single caveat that they had to, of course, take the vow of celibacy. And what they thought was, well, if someone's a homosexual, I guess this would work for pedophiles too, but if somebody's a homosexual, as long as they don't act out their lust for other men, then they're not sinning. And I've been told this repeatedly over the years by Catholics. And I remind them of what Jesus said, that it doesn't take you acting out for it to be a sin. If you have it in your heart, it is a sin. So if a man is coveting another man's wife, it's a sin. And then if he acts it out, then he compounds the sin. And if a man desires a child, that desire, it's called lust. It's covetousness. Desiring something that is not yours, that you have no right to, that you can never have. That covetousness is a sin. If a man desires a child, a pedophile, That is a sin. You don't take a pedophile who has a vow of celibacy and let him run the Sunday school program for kids. You don't do that. You don't take a homosexual, someone who says, I have desires for men, and put him in the ministry. You don't do it. That's the same as taking an adulterer or a pedophile. So at any rate, here is the man who is now the Pope, the leader of the Roman Catholic Church at the Vatican in 1964. His first assignment to the teenage boys in his class was to read the writing of an openly homosexual author. One of the boys in that class grew up to become one of Pope Francis's many homosexual defenders today, to this day. In fact, he's probably the most well-known of the many homosexuals who praise this pope, includes one of the boys in that class. Then I mentioned the pope was asked about his doubts. Does he ever doubt God? And his answer was just, it's sad. He answered in the affirmative, yes. You know, he occasionally doubts God, and that leaves him with momentary feelings of emptiness. But then also, he went on to describe, he didn't put it in these words, but feelings of superiority, because he very judgmentally claimed that those who don't occasionally doubt God remain infantile in their faith, in their Christianity. How's that? The only way to grow in your Christianity is to be like the Pope and occasionally doubt God. Isn't that bizarre? Of course, the Bible says, whatever is not of faith is sin. So somebody who says, you know, I doubt God, they're talking about their sin. Somebody who doubts God is sinning. That's a sin. Now, people sin, that's true. But I was asked by a well-known agnostic if I have doubts. And my answer to him became one of our most popular articles on our website. It's on doubt, kgov.com/on-doubt. What does a Christian doubt? It's actually, I mean, it's a thrilling article. It's absolutely thrilling. And it's utterly affirming of faith and God's existence and Jesus Christ's resurrection. But it does talk about things we doubt, but we don't doubt God. And so that was, what is that? How many of the bullets about the Pope are we up to now? That's the second bullet? Oh, brother. That's it? And how about the Pope a week ago, Pope Francis saying, there's no such thing as Islamic terrorism, but global warming is real. How about that one? Now we're moving from immorality and sinfulness and perversion to mental illness. We're moving from immorality to mental illness. Actually, denying that there is Islamic terror is also immoral. So I've noticed that over the decades, conservative Catholics will criticize the Vatican, but not the Pope. No more. Now they're going after the Pope.